Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
And here we go. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat, getting you caught up on everything you might have missed. Headed into a happy, happy hump day. 800-224-2004 at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, at Sports Map Radio. Make sure you call on the show. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. Let's be real. You love everything about this show. We know you love everything about this show. And we want to hear from you, the listener. So make sure you dial in. That number once again, 800-224-2004. Make sure you also download the Just Saying It podcast version of the show on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom. Wherever else you get your podcast listening systems, we got you covered 24/7, 365 days out of the year. And do me one more favor. Download the Sports Map Radio app. Carry it in your pocket throughout your day so you don't miss a second of all of our great local programming. The wonderful, delightful Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass producing. Fun hour planned ahead. The Detroit Lions seem all in on Jared Goff. Why I actually don't hate that entire idea, especially after what we saw last season. Let's also talk a little bit about the MVP race in the NBA. There's two teams that definitely are going to be front runners to potentially walk away with the hardware. Which one do I think deserves it a little bit more as we enter the final days of the regular season? And it is would you rather time. Lamar Jackson could be on the move. Would I rather see him in a Baltimore Ravens uniform, or could one of these 10 teams be a much better fit for his longevity of his career and also for the longevity of their status as perennial contenders in the NFL? But we start off with the likes of Kyle Shanahan, who certainly has a different style of breed when it comes to quarterbacks, and there is a name that people are buying into, despite being known as Mr. Irrelevant, even though he very much is relevant right now. Brock Purdy last year went 8-0 when he was a starter. Brock Purdy last year filled in for Jimmy Garoppolo, who filled in for Trey Lance, because of there was injury concerns. And because of he was the last pick in the NFL draft, he comes with such a cheap tag attached to his name that the salary toward what he can bring to the table if he is Mr. Consistent down in the Bay Area is basically enough for you to build a legitimate superstar cast, an Avengers-like type roster that should make you a formidable force in the NFC for years to come. But naturally, everything is on hold right now because Brock Purdy, there's two things that we need to know. Number one, he's injured. He is now dealing with a UCL injury. He had surgery. Could miss up to 8 months due to this injury, which would put him on the field sometime in early October, maybe even mid or late October. One of those time periods when he would be there. So you would have to start somebody else. And number two, what you do as a rookie means absolutely nothing to me outside of just a really good year. Part of the reason that we see consistent players win offensive rookie of the years or have all rookie type seasons and then fizzle and fall apart is because teams have film on you. They're able to dictate what are your positives and what are your negatives. Anybody remember back when Carson Wentz was a rookie and how people really gravitated to what he was bringing to Philadelphia? And then in year two, he absolutely flourished, became an MVP type candidate before he tore his ACL, and Nick Foles went on the most improbable run that you'll ever see a backup do with Philadelphia. And then in year three, people kind of figured him out. And they were able to kind of dictate what were his kinks, what were his flaws, what were his positives, what were his negatives. And they made sure that the negatives stood out way more than the positives on top of him being injured. So you can never bet on a rookie quarterback or a rookie in general that what they do in year one will translate to year five. The interesting part, on Monday, John Lynch came out and said that the locker room right now believes in Brock Purdy, and Brock Purdy deserves the right to be the starter simply because of what he's done internally with the team and how the team is bought into what he is selling. Now, Kyle Shanahan has a little bit of a different theory for this one, and maybe it's one that actually will not just benefit him as a team, but it will benefit the guy who they gave three first-round picks and a third-round pick to draft at pick number three.
Jimmy got hurt and opened it up for Brock, and Brock played 8 games and won all of them and played at an extremely high level. We're very excited to have that level of a player as our quarterback. Now, we believe Trey can be that. I think he would have done it last year if he stayed healthy. The good thing for him is with Brock being hurt and stuff, he has an opportunity to try to regain that and everything. And that's also why we brought in Sam, because we can't be set for sure on Brock, because you never know how the injury will go. We think it will go well, and we're optimistic about it, but right now that's on hold. And so it opens up an opportunity for Trey and for Sam to come in and show us what they have.
This is interesting because here's the thing. Kyle Shanahan has this type of quarterback. If you've ever watched the offense, whether that be in Houston, whether that be in Washington, whether that be in Atlanta, and now in the likes of San Francisco, that type of quarterback is a pocket passer. Now, that does not mean that if you're mobile, that is a negative toward your name, because you got to remember, the first quarterback he had in Washington before Kirk Cousins became the "you like that guy" was Robert Griffin III. And RG3 was a dual-threat machine that could make plays with his legs and had a highlight arm. But he was consistent. When you look back at RG3's career coming out of Baylor, when he won the Heisman, when he was one of the biggest names in the likes of the sport, he was Mr. Consistent. And when you look at his first year in the NFL, his passing attack was phenomenal. He had over 3,200 yards, and he had a completion percentage of 65.6. During his time in Washington, he never hit below 60.1 of a completion percentage. And 60.1 seems like a very low number at one point, but you got to remember at the time, this was still when the offense was very balanced, more so 50-50 rushing passing. So if you hit 60% of your passes, that more so in today's NFL would be closer to, I would say, about 67-68%. The bottom line here is that there's a type of quarterback that works in the style of offense. What was the biggest knock on Trey Lance? His accuracy. And I believe in Trey Lance. I have been a Trey Lance supporter since his days at North Dakota State. So much so that when we had the 2021 draft came around, I got a lot of flack for putting Justin Fields as QB3 because I had Trey Lance as QB2. But you got to remember, if he's not the style of quarterback that fits your system, you have to be willing to admit that you failed. And that's a big thing that I think a lot of people in today's society don't want to do. Yours truly doesn't want to admit when he's wrong. I will. In fact, that's one of the biggest things that I try to tell you, the listeners, all the time, is that when you call into the show and say, remember when you had that take about 6 months ago and look at what happened? Yeah. And I have to eat crow. Go ahead and give me the bird. I like it rotisserie style. I'll shove it down my gullet and I'll easily devour it like it's no one's business when I'm wrong. But a lot of people are not built that way. A lot of people want to go ahead and say, you know what, I can find a way to fix this. So maybe the fact that Trey Lance will have an opportunity to start at the beginning of the year absolutely is something to monitor. But the main reason why is because of, well, they invested 3 first-round picks on him. When you invest that much money in draft capital, you hope that the guy that you're moving up for is not just a transcendent player, but he's a player that's almost irreplaceable. That's what you need. Because of when you're giving up a plethora, a smorgasbord, a cornucopia of picks, you're expecting not just consistency, but you're expecting literally the second coming of what you would imagine a generational type player to be. And I hate that word because I don't believe outside of really 2 or 3 players, there's ever been a generational type name that's entered the NFL. But if you're giving up that much draft capital, you are expecting at least a little bit of that type of mantra. So the bottom line is that right now, this is actually a win for Trey Lance. Trey Lance may be hearing from John Lynch, it's Brock Purdy's locker room, it's Brock Purdy's team, Brock Purdy's our guy. But then Kyle Shanahan, the coach, is saying, listen, Brock's out. We know that he can win. We know that he can do his job up to a T because we watched it all unfold. But he's not playing right now, and it's an open competition. And the best news is that for a team like San Francisco, they have a quarterback that does rely heavily on consistency with Sam Darnold. And Sam Darnold, whether or not he ever will live up to expectations as the number 3 pick, spoiler alert, he's on his 3rd team already. So no, he won't ever live up to that expectation. He is a guy that should fit in the Kyle Shanahan offense pretty well. The bottom line is that as of this morning, you have to like your situation if you are San Francisco. Because you have the quarterback who you gave up all this draft capital for, hopefully fully healthy, ready to go for the starters, ready to go for the start of training camp. And if he pans out, well, then you have two viable options on your roster for this year to where you believe one of these players is going to keep you afloat and in contention status for the NFC number one seed. But if he doesn't work out, you bring in a guy in the likes of Sam Darnold for right now. He can be a stabilized option, at least for a couple of games, which is what he kind of did in Carolina this past year. And then once you get Brock Purdy back, there you go. There's your team. The bottom line is that as of this morning, San Francisco, in my opinion, has a lot on their plate. And the biggest one is who's going to be the right quarterback. Maybe, just maybe, all three can. And that is something that I think is a huge positive. Good teams stay good because they address every single need. And one of the biggest needs and one of the more underlining moves of the offseason that I actually appreciated was the fact that Sam Darnold is out in the Bay Area instead of back in the Queen City. Because if I do think he does fit what Kyle Shanahan is trying to do, and if he does fit, well then guess what? That offense should click with the playmakers, with the run game, with the offensive line, and a stellar defense. So much so that once you finally get a guy like Brock Purdy in your system, you have nothing to worry about. And the same thing can be said about Trey Lance. Because if Trey Lance does end up being a dynamic playmaker, the passing game does improve, his mobility aspect isn't deteriorated because of the broken ankle, then now you can go ahead and say, either way, we know that we have a proven commodity on our team, and we have a viable backup option. I told you this before, I'll say it again. The backup quarterback in today's NFL is more important than, I would say, two or three starting positions on offense and at least three or four starting positions on defense. You need quarterbacks to win. Maybe, just maybe, San Francisco has more than one viable option.
We've got your tournament coverage right here on the Sports Map Radio Network, presented by HelloFresh. This spring, HelloFresh is delivering great-tasting recipes that help you stick to your food goals, like new dietitian win options that are under 700 calories. Go to HelloFresh.com/Hoops60 and use promo code Hoops60 to get 60% off plus free shipping. HelloFresh.com/Hoops60 and use promo code HOOPS60. Now, back to the show.
Most valuable player. Let's go ahead and talk about what it means to be that and why this award should go to one person in the NBA for 2023. 800-224-2004 at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, at SportsMap Radio. As of this morning, there are still three viable assets to potentially win the award for the most valuable player in the NBA. The first up is going to be Nikola Jokic, the guy who's already won it back-to-back years and now has the Denver Nuggets sitting with the number one seed in the Western Conference. Good for him. The other name is probably going to be Joel Embiid, who is a physical force of nature, is somebody that you do not want to mess with around the paint, and has gotten better as a shooter, but also gotten better as a playmaker all across the board. He's probably number two. And then you could throw in Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis, to me, is probably the safest bet because Giannis is just Giannis, and when I look at the most valuable player to a team, you take him off of Milwaukee. Is Milwaukee even in the Eastern Conference playoffs? I could not say the same thing about Denver, maybe because of the entire Western Conference is somewhat of a, not a joke, but there's so much injury and so much questions with every single roster that I don't feel like any single team has separated itself. So Denver still could be in the postseason. And Philadelphia does have Tyrese Maxey. They have PJ Tucker. They have James Harden. They have a bunch of other names to where they may not be a high top three seed in the Eastern Conference, but they definitely are in the playoffs. So in terms of that, Giannis should count. But let's just throw Giannis out of the conversation. This feels like a two-man race. There were people up in arms who talked about what happened on Monday night. Yeah, Monday night. When Philadelphia traveled to the Pepsi Center in Denver to face off against the Nuggets. And that game, you did not see Joel Embiid play. And this was supposed to be a top-tier matchup throughout the week. This was supposed to be the Monday game because you want to know why. Two MVP candidates, two players who play the same position, and two guys who are vastly, vastly different type of guys. Nikola Jokic is quiet. Nikola Jokic is not somebody who talks a lot. He's a guy that is low, slow, and lets his game do the talking. Big bull brass Joel Embiid is completely opposite in that. In fact, the only two things that these two players have in common is their position, and both are from international levels. Neither of them come from the United States. That's about it. They are vastly different personalities in the likes of the NBA. But the thing is that people are going to point to where a team stands and how a team is built for the postseason. That's what makes them an absolute can't-miss player and a most valuable player. Here's the reality, folks. The award goes to the most valuable player during the regular season. And if you don't believe me, look at every other MVP. Aaron Rodgers won back-to-back MVPs after leading his team to a 13-3 record in 2021 and a 13-4 record in 2022. He also in 2020 led his team to a 2019 he led his team to a 13-3 record as well. Didn't get the MVP that year, but then again, I don't think anybody was going to get it past the guy who actually ended up winning it, being Lamar Jackson. But at the same time, 13-3, 13-3, 13-4. He was the MVP for playing up to a standard and for keeping his team as the number one seed in the NFC. He did not win the Super Bowl. He did not do anything in the playoffs. In fact, he went to a conference championship game 1 year. Actually, he didn't go to the conference. Yeah, he went to a conference championship game 1 year. And then the next year, he lost the divisional round and allowed San Francisco with Jimmy Garoppolo to go ahead and claim that title that so rightfully belonged to him. And they went to the NFC Championship game. Last I checked, it didn't matter what he did in the postseason that made him an MVP. If we're going to go out and give MVPs based off the postseason, Patrick Mahomes should actually be on his now third MVP, not his second. Patrick Mahomes is a good example too. Last season, no Tyreek Hill, an offensive line that's good, very good, but a defense that was susceptible for giving up big plays, at least on paper. No number really viable one receiver, yet still it didn't matter. Led the NFL in passing touchdowns, led the NFL in passing yards, finished with the number two passer rating. Oh, and by the way, was so underminded because of everyone wanting to go with the hotshot name like the Tua Tagovailoa and Mike McDaniel's offense or the Josh Allen because if he had it in a full offseason, he was going on a revenge tour, that his overall odds dropped. And I actually said at the start of the year, watch him win the MVP because of nobody seems to be talking about him. What he did in the regular season did not mean diddly squat to what he did in the postseason. And that's why I think he won the MVP. Baseball's another one. The last couple of MVPs that we've seen in baseball, at least in the American League, have come to players in Los Angeles. The Los Angeles Angels should be ashamed of what they are as an organization. Because if not only do they have one of the greatest outfielders to ever grace the field, but also they have one of the more dynamic playmakers who is never going to be compared to anybody that's ever graced a baseball diamond in Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani is a unicorn. And much as what we said about Kyle Pitts coming out of the likes of Florida, where he was a tight end that was built like a receiver, should be a 1,000-yard playmaking machine, easy red zone target, pristine route runner. There's nobody else built like him. Kind of same thing with Shohei Ohtani. You're not going to get many people who can pitch 90-plus miles an hour and go 7-inning strong one night, and the next night go 3-for-5 at the plate with a home run, 2 RBIs, and putting the ball in play. There's not many people out there like that. But are we going to punish the likes of good old Shohei Ohtani for what he's done on the baseball field during the regular season because the Angels are a dumpster fire of an organization? No. The best player in the regular season wins the regular season award. It's why you have an NBA Finals MVP. It's why you have an Eastern Conference Finals MVP. It's why you have that notion added in. Because of the postseason is where you see your money made for these teams. But the regular season is all about the stats. So when you look at these two, I will be the first to admit, last season, I thought Nikola Jokic did not deserve the MVP. I didn't. I did not think for 1 second he deserved the MVP. But this year I do. And that is not taking away anything from Joel Embiid, who absolutely has an argument to win the MVP. But look at the numbers. Nikola Jokic is averaging per night 33 minutes. Joel Embiid, 34. So he barely is beating him by one. He's averaging 63.4% of his shots from the field. Embiid is averaging 54.5. 3-point percentage, Nikola Jokic, 39% from behind the arc. Joel Embiid, 34. Rebounds, not defensive rebounds, total rebounds, 11.9 for Nikola Jokic, 10.2 for Joel Embiid. Assist, 9.9 for Nikola Jokic, 4.2 for Joel Embiid. Blocks, 0.7 for Jokic, 1.7 for Joel Embiid. Steals, 1.2 for Nikola Jokic, 0.1 for Joel Embiid. And points per game, 24.9 for the likes of Nikola Jokic, 33.3 for the likes of Joel Embiid. They have both conversations, but more consistency when it comes to his shots, more minutes per game, more rebounds, everything that he's doing is belonging to Jokic. It does not change the fact that this is a regular season award. And I know people are going to also say, well, how can you take this away from Joel Embiid? Especially because of the storyline. Especially because of what he's done. Folks, if you want a good storyline, let's also put this in perspective. Nikola Jokic has his team, the Denver Nuggets, in a conference that features LeBron James and Kevin Durant as the number one seed in the Western Conference. Not to mention, he is part of a ragtag roster that doesn't, in my opinion, have a bona fide number two. I mean, a bona fide number three. I like the number two in Jamal Murray, but Jamal Murray is no longer the same player he was when he tore his ACL. Sorry, he's not. And yet still, Denver is going to have the easiest pathway to get the postseason. Why is that? Because they have an elite playmaker who is literally doing everything and anything for his franchise in the likes of Nikola Jokic. Now, again, if Joel Embiid wins the award, I'm not going to sit here and argue that much. He's very much deserving after everything that he's done for Philadelphia, who currently, as of this morning, is the number three seed in the Eastern Conference. And I would say if you flipped it and put Denver in the Eastern Conference and Philadelphia in the Western Conference, Philadelphia would not only be the number one seed, they would be the number one seed 10 times over. So yes, I know where you're coming from, people. I hear where you're coming from. But this is a regular season award. It belonged to Patrick Mahomes because he had the best numbers on the NFL field this past year. It belonged to Shohei Ohtani because if he was a two-way player that people gravitated towards with home runs, long balls, great hitting, and a low ERA. If we're going just based off of numbers and what we've seen, the award belongs to Nikola Jokic in 2023.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
It's Wednesday, my dudes. And if you know the time it is, you know it is our favorite Wednesday establishment right here on Just Saying It, 800-224-2004. Would you rather? It's a very simple concept. I take two options. Would I rather this or would I rather that? And right now, there's nothing more than I would rather see than Lamar Jackson play football in 2023. I would. I think he's a dual threat machine. I absolutely love his game. I don't care what anybody else at this network or anybody else in society has to say. Lamar Jackson is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and a best quarterback in the NFL does not grow every single day out of the ground. But will he play for the Baltimore Ravens? Is that his best fit? Or could there be another team that is interested but doesn't want to give up two first-round picks and doesn't want to have to worry about the longevity of his career because of the dual-threat mobility? Those are questions that have to be answered internally. I'm not going to waste a lot of time here. Would I rather see Lamar Jackson play for the Baltimore Ravens in 2023, or would I rather see him play for this organization? Michael, what do we have on the table? Oh, start the music. I should have said that. I think I threw you off on that.
Nah, I'm always ready.
You're always ready?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah.
Ready, are you?
So, we have Lamar Jackson in Baltimore or in Atlanta.
That's an easy one for me. It's Atlanta. Honestly, and it's not because of I don't think that he is going to be good with the Ravens. I think he'd be fine with the Ravens. I've seen him work with the Ravens. I love what he's done with John Harbaugh. And I also love that they brought in Todd Monken from Georgia, who knows how to run multiple offensive schemes that I think will benefit Lamar Jackson. But you are getting a guy in Arthur Smith that has been able to go ahead and build success, really long-lasting and sustainable success with the likes of mobile quarterbacks. And he did it with Tennessee, and that's been the thing that he's really been missing in the likes of Atlanta for quite some time. I do believe as of this morning, if you put him in Atlanta, not only are the Falcons going to win the NFC South, but they also are going to be one of the best teams or better teams in the likes of the NFC. So I do think that when you have a mobile guy who knows how to benefit from these style of quarterbacks, why the hell not go after him? Yes, I would love to see him in Atlanta over Baltimore. Mainly also because he would probably be, the second best quarterback, the third best quarterback in that conference. And that makes him automatically much, 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 much better.
Lamar Jackson in Baltimore or Indianapolis?
I'll go with Indy only because of I think if Indianapolis could get him after the draft, they could address so many other needs to where they do join back into that conversation, a playoff contender for year one. Jacksonville's a really interesting team. Are they going to be able to benefit off of this year, or will they take a step back because of they don't have the personnel package that would be able to really be sustainable and teams would be able to catch up with them? I think if they were able to add in Lamar Jackson, but then go get a guy like, say, a Paris Johnson Jr. on offensive line, or go ahead and add in a pass rusher to pair with Kwity Paye on the outside and DeForest Buckner internally, that would formidify your defense underneath Gus Bradley to where you would terrorize Houston, you would demolish Tennessee, and you go toe-to-toe with Jacksonville. So I do think that in Baltimore, automatically he is the best quarterback in his own division, and it's a very easy pathway for him to claim multiple division titles for years to come.
Lamar in Baltimore or in Washington?
I think for Lamar's sake, I would say in Washington, only because I do think it's very similar to Atlanta. He'd be the number two quarterback in the conference, maybe number three if you think Dak Prescott's arm is better than his, which I think is about the same, and the mobility means something. But I think Baltimore right now, you got to understand, as of this moment, we have no idea who's going to be running the show in Washington. And when you have a new regime come in, there's multiple things that are going to happen. The first being likely more than anything else, the fact that you have to have this conversation of, are we going to be a contender? Are we going to go ahead and try and build a team in our image? Do we make some changes here or there? So, like, that's where I kind of sit on this one. So I'll go Baltimore right now because if you know what you have with the Piscottis, you know what you have with Eric DaCosta, you know what you have with John Harbaugh, and that's fine and dandy. But it's not as if I don't think he would be successful in Washington, even though the ownership is an absolute freaking joke right now. And we have no idea what the clown show is going to be looking like in D.C., whoever buys the team from Dan Snyder.
Lamar in Baltimore or in Detroit?
All right, this is one where I can actually say I think in Baltimore, if you build around him, they could be a contender. I wouldn't mind seeing him in Detroit, mainly because I love me some Dan Campbell. I want Dan Campbell to have his flowers. I want Dan Campbell to have his coffee. I want Dan Campbell to walk into a Starbucks and say anywhere in Detroit, free coffee for life. Because of I want him to win a Super Bowl. I have never rooted for a coach more in the NFL than I am rooting for Dan Campbell and the Detroit Lions. And I'm not sure if Jared Goff can get you over the hump. But I do appreciate Dan Campbell being fully invested in Jared Goff as of right now. So I don't think this would even be a deal done. I do think that Jared Goff would be a downgrade from Lamar Jackson. And I do think that with this offense underneath Ben Johnson that is very mobile and also very dynamic with the run pass option, he would be an immediate fit. But I don't think it would happen. Either way, just can we all agree that we want Dan Campbell to hoist up on the Lombardi Trophy? And then once he does, he goes ahead and takes a bite out of a kneecap. Wouldn't that just be the best feeling ever, Michael?
I don't want to watch that, though.
You don't want to watch take a bite out of a kneecap? Go ahead and eat Terry Bradshaw's knees, have him drop down. Hey, come here, man. Come here. I'm on new levels this morning.
You on what?
I'm on new levels this morning.
It's Wednesday.
My dudes.
Lamar in Baltimore or in New England?
I think I like him in Baltimore. Just going to be completely honest with this one. If you are changing coaches, if you are changing personnel, then yeah, sure, I'd be okay with him in New England. But I just feel like him and Bill Belichick would be the best buddy cop drama of all time that no one would be paying attention to. Like the 1980s movies where you had the buddy cop drama with the good cop, bad cop thing, that was awesome. But it doesn't work in 2023. It's why we leave it in the past. Like Lamar in Baltimore has a good rapport and a good relationship, or at least we think he does, with the likes of John Harbaugh. I'm not sure he would have that with Bill Belichick. And I feel like it'd be a lot of conversations of, we run things my way, son. We do things this way. Michael, look at me. I want you to understand that I am the king of the castle. I am Bill Belichick. I'm excited to have Lamar. Makes me happy.
Nothing makes him happy.
I am so ecstatic. I just became a grandfather for the first time. I cleared my 401k, and I am now able to afford AARP. I'm a trillionaire. Michael, I won the lottery.
Imagine. Bill Belichick just wins the lottery.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just a lot of money. You know, money doesn't buy you happiness. Buys you wins, maybe. Like, he'd find a way to make it disappointing.
Lamar in Baltimore or in New York with the Jets?
How the hell is Joe Douglas going to screw this up? Like, honestly, I would love to see him with the Jets, because I think the Jets are a team on the rise, especially with what they have offensively. I love Garrett Wilson. I love Breece Hall. I don't actually think the offensive line is that bad. You just have to decide, are you fully invested in Mekhi Becton, and are you going to add in a right tackle at some point? But I like this team. And are you really going to have a rental option of Aaron Rodgers, who comes with a bunch of drama, has a surplus baggage of just nonsense that comes off the field, and is a me, not a we type guy? Lamar feels like a we guy. Like, honestly, the way that he's acting right now feels like, hey, I have been the we guy for you forever. Now it's about me. Like, this is the team that should be going after Lamar in the AFC. But instead, they're going to settle for Aaron Rodgers, and maybe they'll settle for second place in the AFC East. Maybe. Maybe they'll even do worse.
Lamar in Baltimore or in Seattle?
Honestly, I say only Seattle for one reason. Because I really think that Pete Carroll at this point has earned the right to win a Super Bowl. Do you think you can win one with Geno Smith? Like, honestly, 800-224-2004. Do you think Geno Smith can win you a Super Bowl? And it's kind of the same thing with Dan Campbell. If you don't think that Jared Goff can win you a Super Bowl, then go get Lamar Jackson. I'm fine with Geno Smith right now. And the good news is that you have that number five pick, to where if you really fall in love with an Anthony Richardson or Will Levis and think that in 3 years, if Pete Carroll is still coaching, he will be able to prosper with him, that's fine. But if you only have like 2 years left, I want to see him have at least one more shot. And I do think that the window of opportunity is open. So I would say that, but it's not going to happen in Seattle. That's for sure.
Lamar in Baltimore or in Tampa Bay?
I go with Baltimore. I really do. I think that right now the Glazer family needs to go ahead and take a big, strong look in the mirror and say, we had our fun with the likes of Tom. Let's go ahead and just hit the reset button. Caleb Williams, Drake May, come on down. Or be just okay with Baker Mayfield.
Lamar in Baltimore or in Carolina?
No, I go with 100% Baltimore. They need to go get a rookie quarterback in Carolina. Go ahead and start the franchise with the young gun.
And Baltimore or Tennessee?
Honestly, Tennessee is the dark horse. Last year, you had Cleveland with Deshaun Watson. Tennessee with Lamar could be a possibility.
We're taking you through the brackets on the Sports Map Radio Network, presented by BlueChew.com. Guys, it's all about confidence, and confidence is what you get with the chewables from BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form at a fraction of the cost. And for Sports Map Radio listeners, try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code MADNESS at checkout. That's BlueChew.com, promo code MADNESS, to receive your first month free. Now, back to the show.
Look, Lamar's a heck of a talent, you know. Trying to defend that guy has been something else. We played them 2 years ago, but man, we got a quarterback. So I'm like, we got a quarterback, and thank God we got one. And so we're good. But man, he's a heck of a talent.
That being Detroit Lions head coach Dan Campbell discussing potentially adding in Lamar Jackson. Let me make this really clear. Nope. He's good. 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson, just saying it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Make no mistake. Lamar Jackson in this offense underneath offensive coordinator Ben Johnson would be a spectacle. It would be amazing to watch happen. But there is one thing that I've always appreciated about Dan Campbell. He preaches culture. Culture is so important in the NFL. It's important in life in general. When you have a good culture, a good balance, a good mantra, whether that be in your work life, in your home life, in your friendship life, culture does matter because it provides stability, it provides continuity, and it provides consistency. When you have those three things, life becomes a breeze. Actually, life couldn't be a dream. Life certainly is a dream. Life is a dream. I don't know the rest of the song. That was like from the 1950s. Not the point. Point is that when you see a guy like Dan Campbell preach about building a long-lasting legacy, you want to do it with the people who were there from the get-go, the people who were there through the trialing times, through the tribulations. And even though you do think that maybe you have a great talent that's in the building, you know that what you have currently can work. Jared Goff last year was a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. Hate to break it to you folks. Whether or not you like Jared Goff, whether or not you think that he's a great passer, or if you think that he can win you a Super Bowl, he was a top 10 quarterback last year in every single category out there. Sixth in passing yards, fifth in touchdown passes, had bottom 10 status in interceptions. Oh, and he had a QBR rating in the top 5 and a passer rating in the top 10 as well. And a completion percentage, I might also add in, at 65.1, which hovered right around the top 10. Everything about Jared Goff last year was top 10. So, when you look at that, culture matters. You can say that you don't believe that Jared Goff can win you a Super Bowl, but I feel like at this point you have to give him a shot because of everything that he went through. He was traded and was viewed as the down part of the deal in the Matthew Stafford mix. Matthew Stafford won a Super Bowl. And as of this morning, until Jared Goff hoists up a Lombardi trophy, you can say Los Angeles won the trade because of all they did was they moved off a guy that they did not believe could take them to the promised land. And they brought in a guy who ultimately did in year one. But after year one in Detroit, things became easier. Things became more dynamic. And the fact that they moved off Anthony Lynn as offensive coordinator and brought over Ben Johnson, who served as a tight end coach and got massive benefits and praise from it, ultimately was a major factor and was a big deal breaker for Detroit. 1-7 record, 1-7 story. And what happens? They turn it around. They go 7-1 down the stretch. They only lose one more game. And the game ultimately kept them out of the playoffs. But still, Goff was part of the reason for the success. Defense started to turn around with the front seven. Good young players started developing and turning the corner, started to find their rhythm, started to find their balance. And offensive players started to make noise. Offensive line was great. Running game was great. Red zone efficiency was second to none. But Jared Goff was a part of it. I don't think that Jared Goff can win a Super Bowl by himself, and I will say that part of the reason why he is going to be successful next year in the Motor City is because the franchise made a lot of good moves in the offseason. They are one of my biggest winners of this offseason because they found the needs they needed to address, and they did so. So much so that whatever they end up doing in the NFL draft, I will say, will it be a positive? Whether that means adding in a pass rusher at pick number 6, trading down or up from pick number 18, those 2 second-round picks are going to come in a nifty hand for you if you want to go trade up into the end of the first round to add in a player for that fifth-year option. Those are things that you got to love. I just consider this a huge win right now for Detroit because of what they did in free agency. Fix your secondary, be able to play the board in your favor. Just get the best players possible that work for your roster. And I think right now, Jared Goff is the guy that works for your roster. What would it mean if you preach culture, preach about being through the trials, preach about being through the hard times, and then once you get through those hard times, say, you know what? You did everything to prove to us you belong in the conversation of being a viable starter, of being our guy, being somebody that we believe can at least keep us afloat and take us to new heights in an organization that has only been known for mediocrity, miscommunication when it comes to certain players, and absolute downtrodden free agent signings that never pan out. What would that say? It would say that you don't believe in culture. So I do think in that sense, why not keep Jared Goff? Why not believe that Jared Goff can't be your guy? And I'm not going to say for one second that Jared Goff 2 years from now is the Lions guy. But as of this morning, yeah, he should be for multiple reasons. But the biggest one is culture preaching. It would be remiss for Dan Campbell, after everything that he has done, everything that he has said, everything that has come into fruition for the last 2 years, just move off of him because if he doesn't believe in him anymore, just like Los Angeles did. Once you have that actual notion, though, once you actually have it on film, then maybe you can do so. And that does not stop you from drafting a quarterback in this year's class. You're picking up pick number 6. You don't believe that there's a pass rusher available that is actually fitting your needs, and Anthony Richardson can be that guy. Plus, you would have a couple years to develop him. Why not make the move? There's no reason to say that you have to run it back with a 29-year-old who has been a hit and miss every single year. One really good season in Detroit doesn't change what you did in Los Angeles and what you were unable to accomplish with the Rams, with an offensive-minded coach that certainly comes from a background of consistency and playmaking. Yeah, I understand that, but you got to give him a shot. And I think that that's the most important thing, is that Dan Campbell realizes, I went through hell and high water. I listened to people laugh at me from my first press conference. I listened to people laugh at you. How about we come together and try and go ahead and prove the doubters wrong for good? Right now, I think that Detroit's the favorite to win the NFC North. And I don't think it's particularly close. You don't know what you're getting in Jordan Love in Green Bay. Green Bay also has a plethora of needs defensively. Got to upgrade with the safety position. Also have to upgrade with the pass rush opposite of a guy like Rashawn Gary. And you also maybe are losing some key components of the offensive line. And you aren't set with the playmakers that are currently on the roster. No more Robert Tonyan, so that's a big move. But also, you don't have a consistent number one receiver, at least in the terms of what I would say is relevantly good. Like, yeah, I believe that Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs can be very good complementary pieces, and maybe Watson himself can actually pan out and end up being a really good number one, but you don't know that. So it's not as if Green Bay is amazingly set just because they let go of number 12 and move forward with the perfect number 10. The defense in Minnesota was a downfall last year. And as of this morning, they still are missing a plethora of pieces at linebacker, at pass rusher, at safety, at cornerback, to where I don't think that these 11-0 games in one possession matchups will be 11-0 next year. Not to mention you still have an offensive line that's growing and developing. You don't have a number two receiver opposite of Justin Jefferson. And Kirk Cousins is Kirk Cousins. You like that, except on primetime games. And the Chicago Bears are about a year or two away from actually being a year or two away. So add all this together, Detroit's the favorite. Why not be the favorite with the guy that put you in this place beforehand? Moves made in free agency certainly are going to benefit you. The moves made in the NFL draft last year have already benefited you, especially defensively with guys like Malcolm Rodriguez at linebacker, Aiden Hutchinson in the pass rush, and Kirby Joseph at safety. And I might also add, there's a bit of a rapport with young playmakers like Amon-Ra St. Brown, Josh Reynolds. You could throw in probably Jameson Williams, even though he only had one catch for a touchdown. There's a reason to bet on the likes of Jared Goff next year. And it would be foolish to not move after a guy like Lamar Jackson, but it also would be foolish to say, oh, we can't win with Jared Goff. Why? Because if you went 9-8 last year, when your defense also allowed one of the most passing yards per game, when your defense was missing key components on the boundary, in the nickel, and all across your secondary, when your defense was part of the problem that also was part of the reason you started off the year 1-7, it is part of the process. I understand where Dan Campbell's coming from. I preach culture, I breathe consistency, and I breathe buy-in. Jared Goff bought in. How about you buy into Jared Goff, and let's just see what happens. And if everything else fails, well, 2024 is right around the corner.